Good day, and welcome to the CSRA third quarter fiscal year 2016 earnings conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Please note, this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Stuart Davis, Vice President of Investor Relations and Strategy. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone, to today's quarterly earnings conference call, our first as a public company. Larry Pryor, our CEO, and Dave Keffer, our CFO, are here to discuss our financial results, business momentum, and forward outlook. Today's call is being webcast on the investor relations portion of our website, where you'll also find the earnings release and supplemental financial presentation slides that we'll use during today's call. The information contained in the earnings release and supplemental financial presentation is preliminary and unaudited. Turning to slide one of the presentation, please note that during this call we will make forward-looking statements that are subject to known and unknown risks and uncertainties that can cause actual results to differ materially from anticipated results. Two risks are highlighted on slides one and two, and for a full discussion of these risks and uncertainties, please refer to our SEC filings, including our Form 10-Q, which we expect to file early next week. In addition, the statements represent our views as of today, and subsequent events may cause our views to change. We may elect to update the forward-looking statements at some point in the future, but we specifically disclaim any obligation to do so. Finally, as shown on slide three, we will discuss some non-GAAP financial measures and other metrics which we believe provide useful information for investors. Unless specifically called out, all statements on the call reference pro forma adjusted figures. The slide deck for today's call includes an explanation of those adjustments and other reconciliations of the figures to the most comparable GAAP measures. At this time, it's my pleasure to turn the call over to Larry, who will begin on slide four.
Thanks, Stuart. Good afternoon, everybody. On behalf of the 19,000 employees of CSRA, I want to thank you for taking the time to participate on this call and for your interest in CSRA. I'm proud of the accomplishments of our entire team in our first quarter as a publicly traded firm. As we stood up a standalone company after our spinoff from CSC, completed our merger with SRA, began trading on the New York Stock Exchange, and worked really aggressively to realize the synergies of our deal, both creating new business opportunities and increasing earnings, all while keeping our focus on serving our federal government customers as they implement critical IT and mission solutions for our nation. Our third quarter results support our overall investment thesis and build a strong foundation for our long-term earnings model. Specifically, I want you to take away three key messages from the quarterly results. First, although revenue is a little light, we believe we are set up well to turn towards sustainable organic revenue growth. Second, EPS was very strong as we maintained our industry-leading profitability and aggressively delivered synergy savings from our SRA merger. And third, taking advantage of our strong cash flow model, we initiated share repurchase and dividend programs to deploy capital to generate additional shareholder returns. Now I'll explore each of these areas in a little bit more detail. Key takeaway number one. As I said, revenue was slightly below our expectations, but it was consistent with our performance in the first half of the year, or down about 5% year over year. Entering the quarter, we believed there was a reasonable chance that we'd reach resolution on the Maryland Medicaid Enterprise Restructuring Project, or MERP. Although we do expect to record a gain at some point in the future, we have now taken it out of our projections. That said, our long-term outlook on revenue is very positive. At the midpoint of our guidance, fourth quarter revenues would be up 3% sequentially, building a very strong foundation headed into the new fiscal year. We're not ready to call the precise moment of the upturn, but we believe we are testing our floor. Several factors give us conviction around this view. Most important, CSRA booking trends are robustly positive. In the third quarter, we booked more than $1.8 billion in contract awards. And as far as I can tell, Our third quarter book-to-bill ratio of 1.4 times leads our industry. This marks our fourth consecutive quarter with a book-to-bill ratio of 1 times or greater. Given the variability in the timing of awards, we believe that the trailing 12 months bookings is the best leading indicator for growth, and ours was 1.3 times, with about a third of that being new business. With these wins, we are building backlog and revenue momentum. Our combined backlog was up 6% year over year. Furthermore, the market climate should support a return to growth. Our customers are operating with appropriated budgets that show growth. Yesterday, President Obama submitted his budget request for government fiscal year 2017 that begins on October the 1st. The submission was consistent with the two-year budget framework approved this past fall, and we expect a stable budget environment into the fall of 2017. Despite the backdrop of a presidential election coming up, government spending should be fairly predictable. All of this supports our fundamental long-term view of revenue growth that we laid out in November. We expect over the long term to grow revenue at an average rate of about 2 to 3% as the industry returns to growth and we take market share. Key takeaway number two, the company is committed to controlling well what we can and delivering EPS growth. Based on strong contract performance and rock-solid execution on our synergy case, we increased our industry-leading margins to drive earnings ahead of plan. Frankly, the compatibility of the two legacy companies is allowing us to realize our synergies earlier than expected. We have already achieved our original goal of taking out $80 million of annual cost, and even though most of the savings will be reflected in future reporting periods, third quarter adjusted EBITDA margin was above our target range of 16 to 17%. We will continue to drive additional savings as we consolidate systems and streamline our processes as part of integration. But fundamentally, we now have the team in place that will move us forward. We will continue to prioritize the delivery of EBITDA over cost plus revenue, which is just a part of our DNA. Tying my first two points together, as we are trimming our infrastructure to create the most efficient government service provider, we are continuing to prioritize our investments to business development. We are driving our bid submittal volume higher, and we expect to maintain positive new business awards. The fourth quarter is already off to a great start with major takeaway wins, including the $252 million infrastructure support contract with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The cost synergies help support our investment in growth while improving our leading margins. With strong bookings and margins, we reiterate our expectation of an average of 8 to 10% EPS growth over the next 3 years. And finally, key takeaway number three. One of the principal responsibilities of the CEO and board is to deploy capital effectively. We articulated our balanced capital allocation model at our November Investor Day, and we are committed both to paying down debt to enhance our financial flexibility in operating the business, as well as to returning cash to shareholders through share repurchases and dividends. When we see that our valuation is compelling, we will act decisively, both within a formal trading program and opportunistically when we are able. In the third quarter, we bought back $37 million of our stock, and a little more than 2 months, we've returned $66 million to our shareholders. CSRA generates tremendous free cash flow, and we intend to use that to support total shareholder returns. In summary, we are delivering growing bottom-line results, prudently deploying capital for our shareholders, and winning new contracts at a rate that should provide good top-line growth for us in the coming years. Now Dave will go through the financials in detail and provide our forward outlook.
Thanks, Larry, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm pleased with our third quarter results, especially how well our team managed our costs while executing a very complex transaction. There are quite a few moving parts to the story, so let me talk through everything very deliberately and provide you with a clear view of our underlying performance. Turning to slide 5. In my remarks, I'll refer to the pro forma adjusted results disclosed in our press release. These figures assume the CSC spin and SRA merger occurred at the beginning of the period, and they exclude costs directly associated with either the spin or merger transaction or the ongoing integration process. We believe the pro forma adjusted results provide useful insight into the current CSRA run rate and therefore provide an important baseline for comparing to past and future performance. Our press release provides all appropriate reconciliations from pro forma adjusted results to GAAP results. To be as transparent as possible, we'll also specifically call out items that may differ across our peer set, especially as they relate to free cash flow, which we believe is a critical valuation metric. Following this call, Stuart and I will be happy to discuss the financial figures in more detail. Let's walk through the Q3 income statement from top to bottom. Pro forma revenue was $1.27 billion, down 5.1% from the same period a year ago. On a pro forma basis, our civil segment, which includes health, homeland security, and other federal civilian agencies, was up 2% year over year. New program starts and expansions, primarily in health, more than offset reductions in material purchases on several federal civilian contracts. Conversely, our defense and intelligence segment was down 13% year over year. A major source of this decline was our Army Logistics Modernization Program, which is transitioning to a maintenance phase after a very successful large-scale software deployment. In addition, lower material purchases on Navy contracts, the sale of the Welkin business, and the wind-down of Army OCO work outweighed the ramp-up on new intelligence programs. As is typical for the December quarter, we experienced seasonally high leave-taking due to the holidays, which reduced revenue compared with the September quarter. The first three quarters of FY16 have all been down 4-5% compared to FY15. We're guiding sequential pro forma revenue growth in Q4, and we're optimistic that these year-over-year declines will begin to moderate, particularly in light of our excellent bookings performance so far this year. Our contract mix is one of the key drivers of our margin differentiation, and it was essentially unchanged in Q3. As a percentage of total revenue, our contracts were 44% fixed price, 20% time and materials, and 36% cost plus. Q3 pro forma adjusted EBITDA was $224 million, as our EBITDA margin improved to 17.7%. Driven by both of our operating segments, this strength in profitability reflects outstanding execution across our contract base and includes profit pickups on a few of our large fixed-price contracts. Net favorable adjustments in our estimates at completion, or EACs, for fixed-price contracts were $19 million in Q3, several million dollars higher than we'd expect in a normalized period going forward. Our margin performance also reflects strong direct labor content, the initial effects of our merger cost synergy program, and a change in the estimation method of pension income. Our Q3 pro forma adjusted EBITDA includes $4 million of stock-based compensation expenses and $28 million of net pension-related income. Our frozen pension plan regularly generates income from the return on plan assets, offset by expenses associated with plan obligations. Like many companies in recent quarters, we elected in Q3 to change how we calculate the service and interest cost components of pension income, using the full yield curve instead of a single point on the curve. This approach should improve the correlation between projected benefit cash flows and yield curve spot rates, and provide a more precise measurement of service and interest costs. The estimation method change was the primary driver for increased quarterly pro forma pension income of about $7 million, compared with prior quarters in FY16, and we expect to maintain this new run rate until the next measurement period this spring. As Larry indicated, we've already achieved our original target of $80 million from SRA merger cost synergies, which should generate $50 million of annual EBITDA benefit after the effect of cost-plus contracts. We plan to drive additional cost synergies over the next several months, further bolstering our long-term plan to maintain adjusted EBITDA margins in excess of 16%. This margin rate is sustainably above our peers based on our greater mix of fixed price and T&M contracts, our pension income, our capital investments on key programs, and our ability to drive lower direct and indirect costs. Depreciation and amortization totaled $50 million on a pro forma adjusted basis in Q3. This excludes the amortization expense associated with SRA's funded contract backlog, an intangible asset valued at $65 million that is being amortized over 1 year. As a result, our GAAP amortization expense will be approximately $5.5 million higher per month than our adjusted amortization expense from December 2015 to November 2016. Compared to the 8K we filed on Christmas Eve, the funded contract backlog asset is slightly lower based on a few minor updates in the purchase price accounting. Of course, these changes to depreciation and amortization are non-cash items. Interest expense totaled $29 million on a pro forma adjusted basis in Q3. This figure applies the effects of our post-spin and post-merger capital structure for the full quarter, including the interest on our term loans, revolving line of credit debt, and capital leases, as well as the deferred financing costs and original issue discount on the debt. To calculate pro forma adjusted earnings, we applied our expected long-term effective tax rate of 39%. Our Q3 diluted share count was 165 million, down from our prior SEC filings due to the final share count calculations for a very complex transaction and the share repurchase program we initiated in December. Pro forma adjusted earnings per share in Q3 were 48 cents. The additional pension income associated with the change in estimation method and the lower share count added about 4 cents to our earnings per share in the quarter. Even excluding those benefits, we're very pleased with our ability to drive margins and earnings in a seasonally low quarter. Turning to slide 6 and the balance sheet as of January 1, 2016. We finished the quarter with $204 million of cash, $200 million of drawn revolver, $140 million of capital leases, and $2.8 billion of term loan debt. With the steady cash flows our business has generated historically, and with $500 million of undrawn revolver capacity, we're pleased with the liquidity and flexibility that this capital structure affords us. And with an average interest rate currently around 3%, the cost of debt is very manageable. We will look to lock in a fixed rate on a portion of our debt through a hedging program this quarter. The other balance sheet item I'll note is the net pension liability of approximately $468 million, the vast majority of which is included in the other long-term liabilities line. This figure, which is calculated based on GAAP guidelines, applies a very low discount rate to the plan obligations, given that interest rates remain historically low. Based on the IRS calculation methodology, which uses different actuarial and interest rate assumptions, our plan remains in an overfunded position, and we do not expect to be required by IRS guidelines to make any material cash contributions to the plan in the next several years. The third quarter cash flow statement reflects a number of one-time items related to the spin-off and merger transactions. First, we received funding from CSC prior to the spin-off to bring CSGov's cash balance to $300 million. Then, on the dates of the spin-off and merger, we received the $3 billion of new debt financing and used it to pay off SRA's existing debt and hedges, distribute the cash portion of merger consideration to SRA shareholders, fund the special dividend to CSC shareholders, and pay SRA's transaction-related expenses. Since then, we have made a number of other payments related to the spin-off and merger. We paid $30 million to CSC for the first of 5 annual maintenance payments under the intellectual property agreement that governs our proprietary information sharing. And in December, we paid transaction fees to investment banks and other advisory firms in excess of $20 million. On the working capital side, accounts receivable increased by about $20 million compared to their usual run rate due to a normal seasonal slowdown in payments. Days sales outstanding for the quarter were 55 days. Our DSO should decline over the next few quarters due to seasonality and merger-related improvements. In all, the third quarter was unique from a cash flow perspective, but formed the foundation for a solid capital structure going forward. As these one-time adjustments fade, we will focus on free cash flow, which is the lifeblood of the business. In general, we expect to generate free cash flow above net income as D&A exceeds CapEx by more than the non-cash pension income. We noted in our November Investor Day presentation that we would use a portion of our future free cash flows for shareholder returns in the form of both dividends and share buybacks. To that end, on our first day as a public company, our board of directors established a 10-cent per share quarterly dividend, which was paid in January, and authorized a $400 million share repurchase program effective immediately and ending in March 2019. We intend to deploy cash to buy back shares over time when we believe our stock is undervalued and our balance sheet is well suited to fund the payments. We kicked off the program with $37 million of share repurchases during December and another $13 million in January. Turning to our forward guidance on slide 7, our plan in future periods is to provide annual guidance in the fourth quarter earnings report of the prior fiscal year, and to update that guidance on subsequent calls as needed. We are providing Q4 guidance on this call to provide an extra degree of clarity given the complexity of our historical pro forma numbers, but we'll shift to annual guidance in the future. We project that our fourth quarter 2016 revenue will be between $1.28 billion and $1.33 billion, which equates to a year-over-year pro forma revenue growth rate range of minus 5% to minus 1%. We don't currently expect that Q4 revenue should have any material adjustments, so this guidance is a GAAP figure. We project that our fourth quarter adjusted EBITDA will be between $214 million and $226 million, and our adjusted diluted earnings per share will be between 45 cents and 49 cents. These guidance ranges reflect gradual improvement from our Q3 revenue performance, driven in part by seasonal changes in leave taking and the conversion of revenue on new contract awards we've received in the first three quarters of FY16. We also anticipate that our ongoing cost synergy program will incrementally improve SG&A performance in Q4. Our guidance takes into consideration the effect of the recent major snowstorm on the East Coast, which closed government offices for a number of days. But we've attempted to mitigate that impact through teleworking and flex time programs. Our Q4 revenue guidance also includes the impact of our lowered cost structure on cost plus contracts as we realize synergies. This approach is fundamental to how we make business decisions. We intend to zealously guard profit dollars, even at the expense of cost plus revenue. Although not in our adjusted EBITDA or EPS guidance, integration-related costs will diminish materially in the fourth quarter. FY17 integration costs should be even smaller, primarily related to our ongoing IT system integration projects. Looking ahead to FY17, we anticipate better year-over-year revenue growth than we've had in FY16, driven by the strength of our book-to-bill ratio this year and the backlog growth that has resulted from it. Although cost plus revenue will continue to be suppressed slightly by expense reductions, our earnings will benefit from the full year effect of our merger synergy initiatives, which will help to offset the pricing pressures to which we've become accustomed in recent years. On the cash flow side, we expect to generate free cash flow in excess of net income consistent with our model, and we will look to pay down a portion of our debt and provide shareholder returns. We also affirm our long-term model of an average compound annual growth rate in revenue of 2 to 3% and EPS of 8 to 10%. Combined with a meaningful dividend, we believe CSRA will be an attractive investment for our long-term shareholders. With that, I'll turn it back to you, Larry, for some additional comments.
Thanks, Dave. Before turning to your questions, I want to take this opportunity on our first quarterly call to briefly lay out our strategy and differentiators to give you an understanding of who we are and where we're taking this company. Let me start with how we came into being. I'm now on slide 8. Splitting off of the U.S. public sector business from CSE allowed us to tune our messaging, our benefits, and our go-to-market approach and focus it on our federal marketplace. It also allowed us to think about capital allocation differently, which enabled us to merge with SRA as part of our go-public process. SRA was the perfect fit for us and is an integral part of CSRA, contributing richly to our culture and leadership team. SRA brought us broader access across the entire federal community with especially deep relationships and access in the health and federal civilian markets, as well as complementary contracts in the defense and intelligence communities. Most important is what the legacy CSGov and SRA businesses share. We share a passion for mission, a dedication to next-generation IT, and a firm commitment to cost discipline. Both legacy companies are dedicated to a culture and values around honesty with all of our stakeholders and service in support of our customers. This cultural compatibility is easing the integration process, and our combined team is leaning forward together, taking advantages of combined capabilities and customer access to identify and to pursue newly addressable opportunities. As shown on slide 9, I see CSRA as the premier pure-play provider of IT services to the U.S. public sector. And together, we will deliver innovations, efficiencies, and tailored offerings to our customers, distinct long-term investment opportunities and added value creation to our investors, scale to our strategic partners, and targeted skills development and stronger career opportunities to our employees. With more than three-quarters of our work in IT, we are the company best positioned to combine deep domain expertise with the ability to lead our public sector customers into their digital future. The U.S. federal government is in the process of transforming its IT infrastructure and software systems with mandates such as data center consolidation and cloud first in order to increase efficiency and reduce expenses. Federal CIOs expect relatively flat IT budgets over the next few years with reductions in hardware spending based on virtualization and cloud initiatives. The capabilities we provide address the priority areas of IT investment for the federal government, including cloud, cybersecurity, data analytics, agile-based software development methodologies, and the inevitable modernization of the government's applications with a bias for software as a service and to mobile devices. For the federal government as a whole, next-generation technology offerings such as big data and cloud should show double-digit annual growth over the next 3 years. Now turning to slide 10, several wins and program expansions demonstrate the strength of our go-to-market strategy. First, at the Department of Homeland Security, we extended our work in support of the agency's Data Center One for 4.5 years and added nearly $1 billion of ceiling. John Exerius and his team developed creative solutions and contracting approaches to create an efficient and flexible contract focused on the as-a-service consumption-based model with access to our CSRA private cloud within the government's four walls. Under the new contract, any DHS component can purchase a wide array of managed services, private cloud offerings, hardware and software, network and security infrastructure, app support, and of course, project management. This contract will help DHS evolve with technology and mission needs while meeting their highest levels of security and giving them a trusted and stable foundation to transition to next generation IT. Second, we are beginning to ramp up the FAA Cloud Services contract, one of the largest cloud development opportunities in the federal market. I'm incredibly proud of Peter O'Donohue and our team, which led all of our agile developers to respond to a high visibility short fuse requirement to development and deploy a new application designed to register small unmanned aircraft systems or drones. It was in anticipation of a surge in drone purchases during the most recent holiday season. And in just 6 weeks, we stood up an easy-to-use cloud-based system to register the drones, accept payment by credit card, and print registration certificates. Now, we couldn't have done it without great partners. The Amazon Web Services cloud-based system linked together cutting-edge technology partners like Stripe, Stormpath, and New Relic, and we can support over 1.5 million registrations per hour. This effort has built tremendous credibility for CSRA with the customer and with our partners, and it provides superb past performance qualifications as we bid new cloud-native applications. Third, led by Ben Giesman, we won the recompete of our work for the Administrative Office of the U.S. Courts. Our customer expanded our scope to a potential value of $115 million over 5 years. We will provide full software development lifecycle expertise for a variety of applications supporting probation and pretrial services and electronic court filings, and we will transition all application development to the scaled Agile framework and make use of DevOps methodologies. Finally, our largest new win in the quarter came from the Department of Veteran Affairs. This was a legacy SRA win spearheaded by Mark Cardarelli, who heads up our VA business. On this five-year, $233 million task order, we're helping the VA move to paperless claims processing to enable quicker processing of disability benefits for our vets. This is our first VA-wide program, and it really provides us a natural entree into claims processing. Now, these examples and many more like them convince me that CSRA will be able to meet our long-term financial goals while helping our critical customers handle emerging problems of national significance. Operator, we're now ready to take any questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. Once again, pressing star then one will allow you to ask a question. At this time, we will pause momentarily to assemble our roster. Our first question comes today from Gautam Khanna with Cowen and Company. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Good afternoon, guys, and great results.
Thanks. Thank you, Gautam.
A couple questions to start. First, I was wondering if you could give us some color on the bid pipeline, any metrics you have on outstanding bids, maybe what you expect to submit in the next 6 months, and how the bookings cadence is looking in the March quarter, just given you just came off a very strong year. And then I'll follow up.
So we've pretty much been on track with our model, where we're looking to continue to grow our qualified pipeline and really, you know, having a BD engine running on all cylinders. And I think one of the things we've done a little bit differently is focus on new business in addition to the great work we do on extensions and recompetes.
Mm-hmm. Now, Gautam, one of the things that that Larry's talked about is really building up that submits volume. So we do have a large number of bids that are outstanding, awaiting adjudication, about $6 billion of submits. And those jobs really fit with the pattern that we have in terms of, you know, fixed price work, in terms of focus on IT, and should sustain our model going forward.
We've done about $12 billion in bids year to date, and of that, about 68% was for new. So that you can see we're beginning to pick up some momentum, and we've benefited, obviously, in the third quarter.
Okay. So you have $6 billion of outstanding bids right now. Is that fair?
Correct.
Okay, terrific. Also, I was wondering if you could talk about, you've talked about the longer-term cadence of sales, you know, 2 to 3% sales growth. Can you calibrate us on what fiscal 17 is apt to look like, just given the known headwinds of eMedNY and the LMP program and maybe some others, just to give us a sense for, you know, what is sunsetting next year that is knowable today? And do you expect that 2 to 3% number to be kind of back-end loaded over the three-year forecast period, or do you think you can actually get there in as early as 17?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and, you know, as you look over this year, you can tell we've been testing sequential growth. Q2 was up a little from Q1. When you look at the midpoint of our guidance for the fourth quarter, we're up a little from Q3. And it really is, it's the result of that natural tension where we're working off some of our current book of business, but creating new revenue from the BD engine. The logistics modernization program, yeah, we're absolutely transitioning from very successful development program to O&M. We think the slope is, you know, of decline is softened a little bit, but we absolutely have to replace that with new work. BD is absolutely demonstrating the ability to compete, win, and the book-to-bill is showing it. So we think that the pivot to growth's on our horizon. I just can't call the quarter in FY17 when it will happen. And we're busy working the FY17 plan and plan to do guidance on FY17 at the next earnings call. On the macro level, wow, it's a solid budget picture. The president's budget was more positive than I expected. And just watching the reaction of people wanting to add on to it, and whether it's for OCO or the Democratic senators thinking about the Fed SIB side, the investment in cyber, the investment in repairing legacy IT. So I thought the budget picture was very positive. Now, that's in tension with, you know, kind of the slow adoption rate of our federal customers for next-gen IT. You know, they measure twice, they cut once, they put their toe in the water, and it's not nearly the adoption rate that we see in the commercial side, but it also doesn't have the cannibalization rate. So fundamentally, we've got a timing issue. It's not a matter of if we, you know, pivot to growth. It's a matter of when. And you could, you know, Dave and I are naturally conservative as a newly public company, and we really look forward to, like, giving you color on this at the next earnings call.
Today, can you give us any color on what the known year-to-year headwinds are in aggregate on the top line, just contracts? I think you've talked about at the Investor Day about a 5% of sales that naturally sunsets. Is that a ballpark what you're expecting in 17?
Hey, Gotham, it's Dave. I think we'll stop short of getting into a lot of detailed numbers around that when it comes to 17 and offer more insights on that and more detail on the next earnings call. With that said, we can give you some useful context, I think. As we look at the recompete picture for the year, I'd call it a fairly typical recompete picture. Our average contract length is around 5 years. And that would indicate that in a typical year, roughly 20% would be up for recompete. As we look at 17, it's reasonable to expect that to be one of those pretty typical years. So obviously it's incumbent on us to win the vast majority of those and sustain our business base that way. You touched on a point that is you know, clearly relevant. We have many large contracts. Top 25 contracts are about half of our business, and those are in all different phases of their life cycles. So we've talked about logistics modernization for the Army, which is a maturing contract that will likely decline in FY17 from 16. I wouldn't say there are any that are in that exact phase of their life cycle, but we have several other that have been really outstanding performers this year in terms of both organic growth in delivering in new and creative ways for their customers, as well as you could see in today's results, their bottom line performance and really outstanding profitability. So as we look at 17, obviously our job is to do two things in that front. One, to deliver another year of sustained organic growth on those programs and to find new ways to deliver for those customers. And also to win as much new work as possible to fill a gap created by logistics modernization and other programs in that phase. So hopefully that gives you a sense for it. It's not an atypical year, and it's one that we look forward to providing more specific guidance on the next call.
I appreciate the color, guys, and good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Our next question is from Amit Singh with Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Congratulations again on a great quarter. And I actually just wanted to get on the margin side of the business. So you did adjusted EBITDA margin of 17.7%. And just to start off, you talk about some one-time contract pickups. If you could talk about how much of that helped your margins. And then going forward, you're talking about 16% plus sort of margins. But I'm trying to understand, you know, if you already have all the synergies, you're thinking about getting more synergies. What could bring sort of margins down from current levels? I mean, is 16 being more on the safer side?
Sure. It's Dave. I'm happy to address that one further. So the 17.7 you mentioned, the EBITDA margin in Q3 included a few things that are worth noting, as we did to a degree in our scripted comments. First, there were about 60 basis points of benefit from the higher pension income related to the change in calculation methodology there. In the quarter, we had a relatively small volume of cost synergies that impacted the quarter given the timing of the transaction. We'll have a few more of those impacting this quarter, as we said, given that we've now achieved the initial target for synergies. The EAC cost adjustments and overall contract profitability was really an outstanding element of the quarter. Just fantastic execution on our programs and particularly on some of the large fixed price contracts. So those were $19 million worth of EAC adjustments. With that said, that's not $19 million worth of one-time items, certainly. We are a business of large fixed price contracts, among other contract forms. And we've had a fairly strong flow of favorable EAC adjustments given improvements in contract delivery efficiency over the last couple of years. But 19 is not a level we'd feel comfortable projecting to every future quarter by any stretch. So we talked about several million dollars of lower expectation as we look at Q4 and beyond for those types of adjustments on fixed price contracts. The other element I'd mention is we had relatively few ODC and direct material buys in the quarter. It was a quarter of strong revenue content compared to prior quarters and prior years. If we have more of those, obviously revenue would benefit. The margin would come down just a bit.
Larry? And as we have levers to, you know, extend contracts that may be up for recompete, and we've generally been pretty good at it, we've got levers to defend our margins and our business model. We're doing gangbusters on the synergy case, and we'll continue, you know, to work that every day. As Dave mentioned, we're very focused on the execution at the program level by everyone on our team. And then, of course, you know, we've got Bossier City, Louisiana, where we're really focused on low-cost delivery, where we can couple all of the strengths of moving technical content there, gain advantages through the subsidies of the state and the tax advantages, as well as favorable labor arbitrage. So when you think of those levers, it gives us a lot to work with as we try to defend our margins, grow our revenue, and deliver earnings.
Great. And just one quickly more. I mean, could you guys quantify the impact from the storm in the fourth quarter that you have on your revenue guidance?
It's very difficult to estimate that impact. We have, on contracts where our employees are located on government sites in the D.C. metro area, there's obviously the most significant impact. But in this day and age, many of our employees, even those typically headquartered on government site, can telework and can be just as productive from a home office. So we don't have a great way to calculate exactly the impact of that storm. What we can say is, you know, compared to a typical year where from Q3 to Q4, there would be a nice seasonal uplift given less leave taking in Q4 than we experience over the holidays in Q3. The positive impact this Q4 will be muted slightly by the snow days. Exactly how much or whether we have more snow days between now and March 31 is obviously tough to estimate.
And then our team's really good at beginning to plan about 72 hours in front of a weather event, first thinking about the safety of our employees, making sure our facilities are up and running. Then we start thinking of alternative ways to deliver work in a meaningful way to our customers and helping with our financials.
Great. Thank you very much.
Again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. The next question is from Edward Queso with Wells Fargo. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. This is actually Tyler Scott on for Ed Queso. Thanks for taking my question. Just to start, we've kind of had a couple months here with the new budget agreement. You have the 2017 DOD budget request out. Are you seeing any change in the pace and deployment of the budget here? Are your clients increasing the tempo of, you know, award decisions, or any change there?
I think it's been consistent over the last couple of quarters where they've really all gone back to work, and there's been, you know, good, steady work by all the folks on the acquisition side to get proposals out to adjudicate an award. So our experience is they've been, you know, doing a better job this year than we've seen in the rearview mirror. On the mission side, they're really busy across every agency of government. So I think the palpable relief of a two-year budget agreement gives them all, you know, a hall pass to go to work and to be on the top of their game.
Great. Also, you've had kind of a string of some pretty large wins here with the DHS, the SEC, and then the VA, which I guess was in this awards number. Can you talk about the general level of competitiveness on these? What's the pricing like? Any change to how the contracts are being structured? You know, are they fixed price, cost plus, or T&M?
Yeah, so it's, you know, D, all the above, that you'll see on some of them where your initial period of time on the contract is, for example, with a T&M, as you're going in and doing discovery of their enterprise IT environment, and then you have to think about knowledge camp. Transfer and then moving over to a delivery-based contract. So we are very good at that, but it's one where you absolutely have a mix. For our, you know, our Army National Guard, where we do the enterprise ops and security services, I think that was fairly straightforward and consistent with what we've seen in the past. With the VA, you know, there was a wide variety. We weren't the lowest bidder. We weren't the highest bidder, but we went with a really, you know, good set of teammates, as well as we thought a good technical solution.
I'm glad, actually, you mentioned the DHS award, because it kind of refers to something that Larry mentioned earlier. You know, we have a number of recompetes that are coming up, and in many cases, you know, we're going to look to extend those programs where we can and where we can provide good value to our customers.
And that's one where we're consistent with our margins as we lower our price to the customer using a consumption-based model. And I think that's the future, where you're giving, you know, a next-gen IT solution as they take advantage of digitization, and they're buying something by the drink instead of having, you know, 10 people doing staff augmentation where they're not productive all the time.
Great, and maybe if I can just sneak two more in. Is there any way you could break down what the, you know, how much of your awards this quarter were new work? I know a couple of these big ones were takeaways, and then how much were recompetes? And then also, what's the go-forward OCO exposure maybe for the rest of this year, or, you know, how much more of a headwind is that going to be? Thank you.
So if you look in the in our third quarter, I mean, Larry gave you the kind of the year-to-date number of about, 33% of our awards were for new work. If you're looking specifically in the third quarter, obviously there was the nearly billion-dollar extension that you know, supports the base. So we had, you know, between $400 and $450 million of new business as part of that mix.
And with the DHS award, you know, as they open it up to, you know, 16 components, it's not, you know, legally new work, but we're treating it as an opportunity to meet all of the CIOs, all of the components, and deal directly with them in this new vehicle. I've got a contrarian view of OCO that I think it's found its floor, and given the complexity of the world today, I'm beginning to see, you know, early indicators it's going the other way. So I think the size of the force in Afghanistan stabilized. I think we're seeing some of our team increasing in some of the allied countries within the Gulf. So I'm you know, hesitant to say it's a headwind right now, and I'm just carefully watching where that cardinal direction may go.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference back over to Stuart Davis for any closing remarks.
Operator, thank you for your assistance with today's call, and thank you all for your interest in CSRA. We will be out meeting with investors in New York and Boston later this month, and we look forward to meeting with many of you at that time. This concludes our call for today.
Thank you very much. This concludes the call. Thank you for attending. You may now disconnect.